It's Wednesday, December 11th, 2013, and you're listening to episode 323 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 33 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Wayne.
My name is Pat.
And this is Chris.
Two things real quick, and then we're getting down to it. First off, fearthecon.com. FearTheCon 7 sign-up is still out there. I have not yet put out my first game. I think I'm going to do that this week. But I've not put it out yet.
I've put out two.
Well, I want to trickle mine out like I have done in past years. But I feel it's time to at least get my first one up there.
So I've already said my first game will be going up January 1st. It will be going up very early in the morning, January 1st, because this is just one last reminder for everyone. Ticket prices at their current rate do change as of January 1st. So if you want to get the early rate, get in now. So on January 1st, I'll be putting up one of my first two games, either Blood Moon Bards, or there's a RPGs for Beginner game that I plan on running, where I'm going to have three systems. And the concept of the game is that there's a problem in the multiverse, and a being has selected the same people from three different, drastically different universes. I'm going to do the three systems I think get used the most at the con. Pathfinder, Fate, and Savage Worlds. It's going to be a very pared-down version of them, but for people that are coming to the con, I want to give them an idea of these are the kind of games you'll be playing at the con.
I think it'd be a bad idea and too confusing if you had like one character from Pathfinder, one character from Savage Worlds. But if you had the same character represented three times and they went from Savage Worlds to Pathfinder to whatever, it would be an interesting way to sample the rules. So
because that's the case. They're three different people. Well, they're the same person in three different universes.
Right.
So one of them's a fantasy character. One of them's a fantasy character in Savage Worlds. And one of them's a fantasy character in Fate.
Oh, so you're sticking with the same genre, just with the different systems. Gotcha. You know, because I had read your description of it, and I had voiced some of my concerns with that as well. But that seems much more manageable in a certain sense, I think, than if you were to switch genres.
Yeah, my original idea was going to switch genres as well. Well, I would still switch genres if I wasn't doing it as an introduction game.
I was
going
to say, for beginners,
but for a beginner game, I'm going to stick with the fantasy genre.
Yeah, and right, I think paring down the sheets and rules is probably a good idea as well. Second thing is right now there is an open podcasting award thing through Stitcher. If you're not familiar with what Stitcher is, it's kind of like streaming radio sort of thing for podcasts, something like what you get with Pandora or Rhapsody for music. So if you want to get out there and throw us a nomination, we'd appreciate it. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. And if you're just curious what Stitcher is, just follow it out there and just look at what Stitcher is. All right, topics we're going to talk about for the next couple of shows. And we're kicking off in this one. And I have to give credit where credit is due, because these ideas came from Chad, and Chad is not here, as you guys have probably observed. Chad is off tonight because he had to work late, and then after that had to go see a doctor. But the topic that Chad threw out is this idea of social contracts within gaming. Gaming is obviously a social thing. When you come to a gaming table, there are certain spoken and unspoken presuppositions about what's going to go on around that table. And what he suggested was actually taking these ideas and really breaking them down and examining them. So what we're going to start off with in this episode is, what does a game master owe the players? Okay, let's presume we are talking about a traditional arrangement here. All right, so for these episodes, we're not talking about some pass the stick type of storytelling or anything like that. We're assuming a game that has a traditional game master who is the arbiter of rules and setting and NPCs, and then players who play one or more player characters. So what do you guys feel a game master does and does not owe the players?
Not a damn thing.
Chris, I can tell you prefer to GM.
I do prefer to GM. What does a game master owe its players? I think first and foremost, I think it is a good evening's entertainment as he is able to provide. Meaning he can't necessarily provide everything in regards to the end result of that entertainment, but he has to be there and he has to participate to drive that evening's entertainment.
I'm going to throw out two that come to mind immediately. I've got a whole bunch here, but I'm going to throw out two to start with from my side. The first one is the game master, I believe, owes the group fairness. And I'm subdividing that into equity with the rules and an objectivity of opinion. So that's why I'm calling this two topics, even though it's really kind of one. I believe a game master owes fairness in the sense, rolling above the table, if you got it, you got it, not cheating you, not doing back runs in the plot to try and keep you from getting the successes you got, not killing you when you didn't, you know, actually get killed within the game. I believe that they owe you fairness because they can at any point say anything they want and it goes for the game. And similarly, I think they owe a certain amount of objectivity because game masters oftentimes tend to latch onto the characters and concepts that they enjoy themselves. And those characters and concepts tend to get the best stuff, the most attention. And I think the game master owes it to step back and to say, okay, even if this is not what I want out of the game or what I want to see in the game, this is really important to Pat. He really wants to play this. And so I need to, assuming it's not going to be disruptive, I need to give that some space. So I'm going to start with, I believe the game master owes fairness.
I would say my first one actually ties pretty heavily into yours, Dan, and could be considered part of fairness. Impartiality. A game master owes the players the same thing he owes each player. Just because the game master is married to the player on his right, she doesn't get anything more or less. Just because he's best friends with a player across the table, they don't get more or less. And that means attention, gear, things attacking them, anything. Everyone at the table has to be treated the same. Now, that doesn't mean if you have a new player, you can't do some special things with them. But you have to be completely impartial to the people sitting around the table with you. And that completely folds into
fairness.
Into fairness, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I would say related to that, Wayne, and to kind of refine that a little bit, is the understanding that that impartiality is not always going to exist within the confines of a single evening session. There are times when one player, for whatever reason that's going on, is going to end up dominating that spotlight for the majority of the evening and is going to end up with all the benefits that at that time in that small little, you know, 4 to 6 hour time frame is going to seem like it's weighed heavily, you know, to them. But the understanding is there is that maybe come next session, it's not necessarily going to be that way. And the balance is going to swing back in the other direction.
Yeah. And I think that is a fair point that when we're talking about evaluating what a game master owes to players, we do have to look at this over the term of a game. And now that could be a 5-year campaign, or that could be a one session sitting at a con. So I think we do have to say, though, whatever the time period is talking about, the stretch of that, because certainly there may be a game that focuses on Wayne's character, which is cool, so long as maybe the next game session focuses on Pat's character or somebody else's character. You know, so I agree that we do have to keep in context here that we're talking about over the stretch of events.
Fair overall, not necessarily fair even every minute.
Right. Pat?
What I think that a game master owes the players, owes me in particular, is a well-prepared story that you have actually sat down and you've thought through so that you can tell the story and I can be pulled into your world. I want to experience this world that you've come up with and I want to learn about it through your storytelling. I think that may sound simple, but I think it's difficult. And I appreciate how difficult that can be for a GM, but I think that is very important.
I absolutely agree. I phrased it a little bit differently in the notes that I'm taking here, but I agree with it. I put it down as I think the game master owes the players something to do. The reason I put it that way is because some game masters may prefer a more open sandbox, collaborative, whatever type of game. If there's a game master like me who comes in and kind of the presupposition here is that I'm going to have a more detailed plot and setting. It's not going to be a railroad, but there's going to be a definite narrative to it. Then I absolutely owe you that effort. But regardless of your GMing style, you certainly owe it to the players to give them something to do. I do not think it should fall on the players where they have to create the action and you don't even respond when they create the action. All you do is just kind of sit there and observe and nod sagely at whatever it is they're saying.
Yep. And tying both of those together, Pat's idea of discovering things as well as your idea of fairness. If there's somebody plotting behind the scenes and you haven't even created them yet, I'm not going to feel as a player that you're being fair to me, because I want the fairness of being able to solve the mystery during the course of the game because you've prepared it and thought about it ahead of time.
Yeah.
And sure, things change during the course of gameplay, but that's something I want in any form of media. I want the person telling me the story to play fair with the story they're telling me. So if I'm paying attention, I can figure it out myself as I go on, and I don't get introduced to the character that's behind it all that you've never actually met and never had any way to interact with, but here he is, and he's your enemy.
Yeah, I don't mind sandbox elements to a game. In fact, I enjoy that. In a long running campaign, I want to have the freedoms to be able to come into it as players and say, you know what? We kind of like to do this, and we'd like to explore this, Game Master. And we can sort of take a sidetrack for that for a little bit. But overall, I want a story. I want the GM to have thought, I've got a big picture story that I want to tell. Maybe it's 3 points, and there's an A, B, and a C. And obviously, the things will be fleshed out as you go, but you've got to have the basis figured out. I don't think it's fair to anybody, even the GM, to just go into something cold and say, you know what, I'm just going to pull this out of my ass as I go.
Right. The next one I have on the list is, I believe the Game Master owes the players empathy. But what I mean by that is, we have talked repeatedly about how the purpose of a game is for everyone to have fun. And if someone at the table is clearly getting frustrated by your actions or actions of another player that you are capable of intervening against, you know, they're clearly not having fun. Everything they attempt to do fails. They can't roll above a 1 to save their lives, whatever the case is. I think you as a game master owe it to do what you can to intervene to make sure they are having a good time. Now, I don't want to let that be overstated. I don't feel as a game master's job to hold everyone by the hand and make them get involved and make sure they're having fun. And if they're not having perfect fun all the time, then it's 100% the Game Master's fault, because players don't have to do jack. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, if a player is clearly getting frustrated by something you can control, then rather than saying, well, tough...
Come on, say it, Dan. I'll say it for you.
Tough shit, that's how the game goes. You can say, okay, you know what? You're really attached to this character. You haven't been able to roll above a 1 for the past 3 sessions straight. I'm going to cut you a break. You know, maybe the trap doesn't need to be there. Whatever. It is not your job to run people into the ground.
Some of that falls under what I consider a GM's role as a traffic cop, too. Just kind of watching what everyone's doing and kind of directing. I've noticed over the time I've been playing, some of that comes down to, is the GM capable of telling?
You know, I was going to break on that, too, and say, I think that can be a really difficult thing to do, because you really have to be aware of the mood of the table and everybody at the table while you're trying to tell your story. And I think it's very easy to sort of get caught up in the telling of the story and lose track of maybe what is happening with individual players.
Well, and I've talked to a lot of GMs about this actual topic, and it's something I think I'm pretty good at it. Being able to tell what everyone's thinking around the table. I don't get blindsided a lot afterwards, but I've talked to some GMs who just were clueless. After the game was over, they were trying to pick out, and they had no idea what anybody thought.
Mm.
I don't know if it's a skill you learn or something that's just inherent in certain people. Some people will always be better at it than others. I think the key of what the GM owes the players is, if you know it, do something about
it. I think that's one I'm going to put on both parties. And so I'll probably mention this again in the next episode, where we talk about what the players owe the Game Master.
Nothing.
Social honesty, you know, is, I think, a huge one for both parties. Both parties owe each other a, and I'm going to say a metagame communication, but when I say metagame communication, it's probably really not quite the right word, because I don't mean communication that actually, like, circumvents, you know, plot and rules and such. But what I'm talking about is a communication about the game. Are you having fun? This is what I want to get out of running this story. This is what I want to get out of my character. This is where I'd like to see things go. I'm really getting tired of this kind of thing happening, whatever. Cannot sit there and fairly expect everyone just to read your mind and know whether you're having fun or not. So I think all parties owe each other that open communication.
Well, yeah, and that's what I was going to bring up, was being able to present that open form to allow for that kind of communication. And related to that is, the GM also owes his players a thick skin. I mean, if you want to have that kind of communication, you have to expect at the same time to get criticism that you may not like. And if people are going to attack certain things that you personally might hold dear within that, either that storyline or within that campaign setting, you've got to be able to take the criticism for that and explore their reasons as to why they don't like what it is you're doing. And if it means compromising it, that's possible. Or if it means just a little bit of, metagame explanation as to, trust me on this, hang on, I understand your concerns, but you don't need to be concerned about that, kind of reasoning afterwards, you know, that has to be there. But a thick skin is necessary, because you will do things that people don't like. It's just going to happen.
Dan, I've got one that I am sure you're going to agree with 100%. The GM owes the players the sanctity of that player's character.
Yes. That's one that I think if like Chad in particular was here, he'd probably debate me on. But no, I absolutely agree that I think
if I've defined my backstory and I haven't specifically told the GM that you can feel free to play with it.
Yes.
I don't want my backstory twisted.
I completely agree because the players only have one thing in the universe. The GM has the rest of the universe. If you have to go in, and I'm not saying...
I'm the type of player that I typically would give that permission to.
Right.
If you come to me and say, hey, I've got this cool idea for your backstory. I want to make it a surprise. Are you okay with me playing with it a little bit?
Right.
Chances are, I can't think of a single game where I would have said no.
And I'm certainly not going to say, and I want to be careful here in framing this so people don't misunderstand what we're getting at, because when I'm pretty sure we're on the same page here, is the GM has every right to interact with the material you bring.
Oh, yeah.
To interact with the backstory you've presented, the character that you've created. But what I do not want, and where I would agree with you on the sanctity of the character, what we've called the golden box around the character sheet, is the game master should not dictate, okay, you're at a party, and this is what your character does. No, shut the hell up. It's my character. I'll tell you what my character does. Or, yeah, I know you wrote in your backstory that this is what happened, but it turns out you were wrong. It's actually been like this the whole time. And you're like, well, wait a minute. That was a huge part of how I wanted this character to develop. This is what I wanted to play.
Exactly. If I'd say I was the son of a paladin, and then later on it was revealed that I was actually the son of a...
The Antichrist?
Exactly.
Yep.
Without
posing as a paladin? Yeah, I mean, that's...
That would bother me.
Yeah, it's kind of like, man, look, I wrote that. That's what I brought to the table. Leave it alone. Unless we agree up front that there's going to be some meddling, that's something different. But I would absolutely agree with you that without that kind of permission from the player, the game master absolutely owes them the sanctity to play the character.
Yeah, I can say when I'm GMing, I never assume what the player is going to do because I'm not playing that character. I can't assume what that character would have done off screen. If it's something that needs to happen off screen, just ask the player, what would the character do in this situation?
As a part of my earlier one, sympathy, I think the game master also owes the player's perspective. And what I mean by perspective is an understanding this is just a game. Now, when we get to player part, I'll talk about this from the other angle. But I don't think the game master should be harsh to players who get called off for a family emergency. One of the ones I hate in particular is I can't make it for a legitimate reason. You're going to play my character and I haven't agreed to this. And I come back and find out, oh, he's dead or radically changed or whatever. And I had no input in this whatsoever, never agreed to this. And, you know, I think game masters owe their players that perspective. And I've heard some horror stories. I will have to say I have never experienced this personally, but I've heard some real horror stories about people like, yeah, I had to miss a game or two because of work or something like that. And the game master's just a total dick about it. It's like, well, you couldn't make it, so tough. That's just how the game goes. Really? I mean, aren't we all friends here? So
well, and I've seen that happen from a player's side where they let somebody else play that character, and they totally just took it in a completely different direction. And the GM left it as, yep, that's what happened because this person played it. Wouldn't change it back. Wouldn't like retcon any of that misbehaving that was done by that player who stepped into that role.
So in this situation, it's clear cut. As the GM, your responsibility to your player, if they're not there that week for what it doesn't, I don't care what the reason is, and they're still in good standing and they're going to be back. I mean, that's a different thing. I mean, if they've quit the group, whatever, but they're not there. If you're going to play that character, it is your responsibility. I don't care what you have to do. That character does not die. Nothing radical happens to it. It basically gets delivered back to the player character in the same condition he left it. I don't give a shit what you're doing. That's just what you do, because that's the kind of thing that happens. And if you disagree with me, you're wrong.
Well,
period.
Put it this way. You are borrowing that character like you would borrow anything else.
I would.
The rules of borrowing something is you return it the same condition.
I would accept it with one caveat, and only this caveat was true, which is there was agreement on it. For example, when we were playing that Battletech campaign a while back, we had a thing where we said, if somebody's not there, somebody else can pilot their mech. Well, that was important to the strategy because you guys had a strategy based around the roles of your mech. Now, that might mean in the process of combat, somebody comes back to find their mech trashed. Now, I guess that's okay in Battletech because of the fact that while mechs are rare and valuable and all that stuff, It still doesn't mean your character's dead.
That's a little different. I mean, yeah, because of the system, I think it's a little different.
Yeah.
Because in that game, our characters really were our pilots as opposed to the mechs.
Right.
Now, I know there will be people that can disagree with you, but really in that case, we were role-playing.
Right.
And it's so our pilots were. Yeah,
and I don't want to get caught up on a tangent here, because this is really where I'm going from what I would say is black and white truth to more kind of my personal opinion. But I also think it would be okay for there to be some risk on my character if I was also getting a reward. Let's say we're playing D&D and I'm playing the cleric. Party needs the healer. I would be okay with saying, okay, I'm going to let somebody play my character. And that means there's a risk I could come back to a dead character. But I'm also going to get XP and a cut of the treasure and all the other things I would have gotten if I had been there. You know, we're at least going to have some parity there.
But the way I look at that, though, differently, I mean, it's the one way you could do is you could just say, OK, I'm not there. So my character is out the session. He's not with the group. Oftentimes, that's not going to happen. It's going to be a situation where, well, we're mid dungeon. You're there anyway. You're not just taking a nap in one of the cleared cells or whatever, because in that sense, you're going to be with them. They're going to get a share of their treasure and the XP because they're there. It's just still that, you know, I do not come back to my character and he's missing a limb.
Maybe in that case, then what the GM owes his players then at that point is to, especially the one who's not going to be there, is to make sure that he takes that time once he finds out to say, kind of in a situation where you can't just take that nap. So you got to give me some sort of guidelines as to what lines you won't cross, even though you're not here, you know, so we can still manage your character to a certain point, but we don't want to cross certain lines. What would or wouldn't you do? Those kinds of things. You know, so you at least have some sort of guideline as to where it's going to go. And yeah, you can fudge things after the fact, but you don't want to break the story continuity for everybody else just because that guy just couldn't be there that particular night.
You know, I think in this situation, too, I'm going to throw this one actually on to that everyone at the table.
I think Wayne put it really well. It's the rules of borrowing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly.
You borrow a character the way you would borrow anything else.
Accidents are known to happen when you borrow something, but, you know, you do everything you can to return that in the same shape that you got it when you borrow it.
Another thing I'm going to throw out here, and I'm going to put some explanation with this, is knowledgeability. I believe of GMO's his or her player's knowledgeability. Now, I don't mean that a game master should not run a system or setting they don't know perfectly. I don't mean that a game master should be required to have read every little splat book, every novel, every source book. That's not what I'm saying. But I have played in games where the game master really did not feel the need to do the due diligence of even understanding the basics of the rules and setting. And in many cases, really didn't seem to have any idea where their own plot was headed. They did not have a sense of knowledgeability about how to run the game. And look, you are the game master. That is your job. Systems variously will call you the game master, the storyteller, the dungeon master, the referee. If you cannot fulfill these roles, then don't sit in the seat. And in order to fulfill these roles, you have to know something. If you're not willing to do the due diligence of learning something and inventing something, that's fine. Move over a seat into a player position. And I don't know that I'm cool with that, but we'll get to that when we get to the next topic.
I have seen this one. And just to be clear, in this situation, we're not talking about something that just happens once. Let's say you run into a situation and you're using a spell that you've never seen before. That's one thing. You know, it happens.
Yeah,
GM has to look it up real quick. And then the next time it happens, the GM's ready because they've done their research. Well, things happen in game. This is not caring to learn to begin with, or if something comes up, not taking the time between games to figure it out.
Yeah, you're making no attempt to learn along the way. I am a big believer that game masters should experiment, and that may mean running a game you've never run before and somebody at the table knows it better, and that's okay. I ran Pathfinder for John, and John knows Pathfinder a hell of a lot better than I do. I know 3.0 and 3.5 pretty well, but John knows Pathfinder a whole lot better than I do. And there were many times I was having to stop and say, John, how does this work? But I would then pull up the rule book and I would read that rule, or read that character class, or read that spell and keep growing my knowledge. And so I was willing to take on that role of knowledgeability and also to admit my limitations. And here's the next one. A game master has to be willing to admit they were wrong.
Bullshit.
That could be wrong about the rules, wrong about a plot event, wrong about a lack of continuity, internal contradictions. If your players call you on it and you are wrong, be the bigger man or woman and admit, you know what? I screwed that up. That was my bad. Let me undo that or let me fix that somehow.
I prefer to say, oh, I guess we just had a misunderstanding. Yes, apparently in this thing, I thought it was this, and then you make up some sort of answer as to what you thought it was, even though it was, you know, different than what the actual rule was. It's just like being a parent. You can't admit that you were wrong. You just, I just misunderstood the situation.
No, I believe a trait of a good parent is the ability to admit they were wrong.
Absolutely.
You want to bring up kids with the example that they should take responsibility and whatnot.
We haven't hit on the setting one here, but I think that's a big one for me too. If I were to sit down to run a game of, let's say, Dune, first of all, I wouldn't do it. Especially I wouldn't do it if I had Pat sitting there across the table from me. Because I know that whatever I attempt to run in the Dune setting that I have never read the books on and know nothing about isn't going to match up to his knowledge of that setting, and it's not going to feel real to him.
Well, I would, provided I had some kind of free rein. If I said to Pat, look, you really want to play in a Dune game. I don't know Dune that well. I'll take on the knowledge ability. I'll learn a rule system that we're going to use. I'll at least go out and read the damn Wikipedia article on Dune. And I will make some attempt to not be a complete buffoon. Yeah. I will never know this setting as well as you do, because I'm not interested in reading all the Frank Herbert books, plus the ones his son or whatever wrote, plus all the commentaries and the 15 different iterations of the movie and miniseries and whatever. But, you know, I can at least say I'm going to make some due diligence to not come in here completely ignorant of everything that is going on.
Well, and the big difference
absolutely.
Is, Dan, you are a huge Transformers fan.
Right.
I would run a Transformers game for you because I understand Transformers. I understand that world. Do I know it as well as you? I don't even begin to claim that. But I know I can give a Transformers feel,
right.
And I know you would be cool with me saying, this is our Transformers universe.
Yeah, and what I had to do this with two different people that come to mind. One was with Mikey Mason, who, as I've talked about, I'm really proud of the guy because he ran my own homebrew for me. He's run Skies of Glass now for me multiple times, did a great job with it, and I made him a promise up front. He and I went driving one time, and I kind of gave him a crash course on the Skies of Glass setting, and I gave him my word. I said, I will not contradict you. I said, if you have a question, I will answer it. I may tell you, like, while we're taking a break, hey, this is kind of how the setting works, but I will never at the table contradict you. I did the same thing years back for Mike Kay, the ex-host of the show. He was running a Battletech campaign, but he was really intimidated because he knew I knew so much more about Battletech than he did. And I said, Mike, I'm not a douche. As long as you're making some attempt to know the game and to play fair, if you tell me House Davian does this and I don't feel how House Davian would act, whatever. It's your game.
Yep. And that's the key. The taking the time to make an effort. There are some people that I know that would just jump in and just, okay, well, you want to play a Firefly game? That's just really cowboys in space. That's all I need to know about it.
Yeah, exactly. All right. A couple things I think the Game Master does not owe the players. One, the Game Master does not owe the players baby bird feedings. If you cannot create some amount of action, if you cannot get off your ass and role play and interact and at least every so often put some kind of effort into the game, it is not the Game Master's job to sit there and put on a puppet show for you. That is not the Game Master's responsibility. Secondly, I do not believe it is the Game Master's responsibility to fund and manage the entire social event. Mm-hmm. A lot of groups I've been in, it falls to the Game Master to find out who's going to be there, what we're doing for dinner, where we're gaming, what we're going to do about so-and-so that's absent, bring the snacks, BS.
You're a game manager, not a project manager.
Precisely. That is not the Game Master's responsibility. If you have a social agreement within your group that you rotate GMs and whoever's GMing does all that stuff, fine. But I would never say out of the box that everyone else could just kind of sit there and idly consume while the Game Master has to produce both a game and the social event that surrounds the game. The Game Master does not owe you those things. Mm. I would also say the Game Master does not owe you anything materially. I've played with Game Masters where they say, you know what? I'm so interested in this game. I'll buy you all a starter book. I'm having so much fun with this particular campaign. If you pick out a Reaper Mini, I'll buy it for you. And maybe I'll get a friend of mine who's really good at this to paint it for you or something like that. Great. Those are gifts. Friends give each other gifts. I'm cool with that. You expect that out of your Game Master? You've got a social maladjustment.
Completely agree.
One thing I would add to that, too, is I think that the Game Master does not owe the players to tackle every minute detail in regards to their character background. You have, you know, 4 to 6 people at that table. Should you focus on, like, what their major character arcs and goals and personality attributes are? Absolutely. But do you need to, you know, actually address what was this one thing that your uncle did back 2 years ago and details out something like that? No. No, you don't have to do that because there's too many. There's too much for you to manage.
That's a pet peeve of mine. If a player gives you 4 pages of background and they expect every last bit of it to happen, there are other players like Dawn is a great player to have at a table in some ways because she will come with a couple sheets worth of NPCs and things and she will hand them to you. And they are now yours to do whatever you want with.
Yeah.
She won't complain if they're not in the game, and she won't complain if you change them.
Yeah, and see, and that's very different because I have played with people, and I've done this myself as well, where I really love my character, and so the game master gets a novella. And look, the game master's got so much going on, they cannot possibly be expected to read your novella, remember everything that was said in there, which is why as a game master...
Dan, when Dawn hands me these, they're sheets that are separated by the individual NPC... that are organized in a nice, neat fashion where you can read them easily and reference them.
She's giving you spoonfuls. She's not dumping a tray on you.
Exactly.
That's a very...
Not even that. She's giving me, like, an encyclopedia, a reference one where you can cross-reference.
Yeah. So, no, that's pretty cool. But I think the Game Master does not, in general, owe any player that level of coddling because they have a lot of stuff going on. And if a player expects that kind of coddling, I don't know what to say except get over it. The game master just plain cannot be expected to do it. In fact, one of the things I've taken doing, talking specifically about background write-ups and such, is when I GM nowadays, I give min and max links. I say I want at least, and I mean, it's not like down to the letter or anything, but it's just like, I want roughly this many paragraphs and this many character hooks. Don't give me a lot more than that. You know, I want about a page worth. Don't give me 3 sentences and don't give me 6 pages. I'm not going to sit here and say, well, you went 5 words over a page, so I'm throwing your character out. Nor will I say, well, you gave me half a page. Look, it's just a ballpark here. Just get it close. But don't overwhelm me and don't also leave me completely empty handed. Because that goes back to it's not the game master's job to put on a puppet show while you passively consume.
Yep.
I'm really looking forward to seeing what the people on the forums have to say, what they feel game masters do and don't owe. And we will come back in the next episode and take this from the opposite angle of what the players do and don't owe the game master and each other as players. And depending on how that goes, that actually may end up being 2 episodes. I guess we'll see how long it runs. But anyway, thank you guys for tuning in. Check the show notes. As always, have a great week and great games, and we will catch you next time. This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2013. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.